Hi, we have new music from the Natural Information Society, and we're hearing that behind us now. It's called Perseverance Flow, and it goes on for another half hour. We're not going to be able to hear much of it today. We heard from Jim White, new music, a solo record on Drag City called Inner Day. The piece was called Thanksgiving, Three Dead Walls, and I hope you all have a stress-free and hopefully even delicious Thanksgiving this week. Jessica Moss before Jim White, a gorgeous new record called Unfolding, from which we heard Nowhere. Margaret Leng Tan playing a great piano piece from Somme Sato back in 1986, piece composed in 73. It's called Litania, from a record called Litania. Margaret Leng Tan plays Somme Sato. Turner Williams Jr. and Derek Moneypenny, each playing this amazing instrument called, I forget, it's over there already. It's like a combination between a sitar and a typewriter. It's a really, really cool instrument. I saw Derek Moneypenny play one live on Jonathan Herwig's program a couple weeks ago. Really, really cool thing. Those are the two of them covering Sun City Girls' Space Prophet Dogon. Did you catch that? The melody was a bit buried in there, but it was there, from their new collaboration called Drooling. And one third of said girls of Sun City, Alvarius B., Alan Bishop himself at the top of that set, from a 2014 7-inch. The song was called Sorban Palid. And that, my friends, is everything we heard. My name is Scott. Look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great week. And stay tuned for Mark Hurst. Tectonic is coming right up here at WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Bye.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour. Thanks so much for joining. Now, if you've been listening to recent shows, you know that I've covered data centers a couple of times from a couple of different angles, spoken to some people about this. I want to talk to you about one data point from a recent report, and this is going to lead into the title of the episode, which I'm going to tell you in a moment, and who we're going to be speaking with today. But here's the data point. In Indiana, there is this data center complex that I think has been approved and is going to be built, and it's going to go up for a cost of around $8 billion. That's billion with a B. This was due to, as the report says, various incentives that were offered to Amazon in 2024. Okay, so Indiana data center, around $8 billion. And this comes from a report by Pat Garofalo at the American Economic Liberties Project. The report is talking about data centers and how to rein them in. The title of the report is How to Rein in Big Tech's Secret Data Center Deals. So here's the twist with this $8 billion project. When I said that it's being paid for by various incentives, that gives you a clue as to where this is headed. Because Amazon, as of when I just checked, is north of $2 trillion in market value. Do you think Amazon is picking up the full tab for their data center build-out in Indiana? No. Even though it's going to cost billions of dollars, Amazon with, again, over $2 trillion of market cap available to them, they're not picking up that whole tab. The various incentives that add up to around $8 billion, do you know who's paying those? It's the citizens. It's the residents of the area in which the data center complex is going to be built in Indiana. $8 billion. And so you might say, wait a second, why would the citizens of that area in Indiana agree to pay $8 billion in various incentives, you know, tax breaks and whatnot, in order to put up a data center complex that is going to suck down so much of the electricity on that local grid, not to mention all the water? It could very well lead to higher power costs, you know, bigger utility bills. Why would the residents agree to this? And if you know about these data center deals at all, you know the answer to that. And that is the residents never agreed to it. In fact, it's possible that they didn't know about the deal, if it's anything like a lot of the data center deals that are going on right now. And so the title of today's episode is Citizens Are Being Forced to Pay for Big Tech Data Centers. And this episode features Pat Garofalo. I should add that if I had more space for an episode title, I would have added that citizens are being forced to pay for the big tech data centers outside of their knowledge or consent, for the most part. And the reason that the citizens are having to pay without their knowledge or consent is because the local officials sign these deals without telling their constituents. And if you ask, why wouldn't they tell their constituents before they sign a deal, making the constituents liable for billions of dollars in incentives? Because the officials had signed NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, that prevented them from telling their own local community what was happening. And this is the pattern that happens again and again. These giant build-outs, citizens pay for outside of their knowledge or consent. The officials have signed NDAs, and the big tech companies gain all sorts of support, all sorts of financial support for their data center buildouts as a result. And if you want to know how this happens and why, that's why I wanted to play this conversation I had a while back with Pat Garofalo. He writes the Boondoggle newsletter, which I'd recommend. And he also wrote this report, as I said, that is called How to Rein in Big Tech's Secret Data Center Deals. Pat wrote this through the American Economic Liberties Project, and it's dated November 2025. There's a link to that report on the episode page, as well as Pat's newsletter and a bunch of other stuff that I'll get to after the interview. You can find all of that at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. And for right now, let's go ahead now and listen to this conversation I had with Pat Garofalo. At this point in the conversation, we're talking about how Amazon was working in Frederick County. This is a county in Maryland, north of Washington, D.C. Amazon was working with officials against the interests of citizens in order to build things like fulfillment centers and data centers. And you'll hear all the details from Pat now. Let's go ahead and listen to that conversation here on Tectonic. Basically, Amazon, through its Amazon Web Services, AWS, is building data centers all over the U.S. And you have been covering how this megacorporation is working with public officials against the public interest with NDAs, that is non-disclosure agreements, and all sorts of other ways of affecting public policy that people may not be aware of. So can you give us a little background on what's happening in Frederick County, Maryland?
Yeah, so I think I'm actually going to back up even a step further, if that's okay, which is that I think most people are pretty familiar with Amazon's attempts to get the public to subsidize the various parts of its necessary business infrastructure. The most famous is the Amazon HQ2 debacle, in which Amazon announced it was going to build a second headquarters and had hundreds of cities all over the country jumping at the opportunity to pay tens, hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars to Amazon for this second facility. A step down from that is Amazon's distribution system. Its warehouses and distribution and fulfillment centers are often subsidized by the public. They receive giant tax breaks, they receive cheap land, they receive regulatory favors, they receive all sorts of stuff. Again, sometimes in the hundreds of millions of dollars for individual facilities. There was one up in Niagara, New York, that received $120 million in public money for one single distribution center.
Wait a second, Pat. You're on a roll. I'm sorry to stop you, but I covered this HQ2 debacle, you correctly called it, and I was so glad to see it fail in New York so that I, as a New York State taxpayer, did not have to pay into the whatever it was, $3 billion donation fund for Amazon to build this thing here. But you're saying that in upstate New York, in Niagara, which is not a very wealthy part of New York State, you're saying that taxpayers were on the hook for over $100 million to give to Amazon in order to build a distribution center?
Exactly. You got it. And this sort of thing happens all over, all the time. Amazon has received, the count is definitely in the billions of dollars. It might be closing in on $6 billion across the country in public subsidies. Most of that is for warehouse and distribution centers. But what brought us here and why I wanted to kind of take that step back is because it also receives public funding for its data centers, go ahead.
I'm sorry again. Why does Amazon need all these public subsidies?
It does not. It's a giant scam. It has convinced state officials, local county officials, mayors, city councilors, and perhaps most importantly, the kind of corporate subsidy machine, which is folks who work in local economic development offices. And Amazon has convinced these folks that this is a good investment for the public to build these facilities and get some level of job creation, economic activity. The case is nonsense. The empirical evidence shows that these facilities are actually bad for the local economy. They drag down wages, they destroy jobs, they harm local retailers. And I'm not saying that's just like anecdotal, although that should also be obvious. There has been actual academic studies done on this that shows that an Amazon facility opens wages in the local area go down, local retailers close, all sorts of bad stuff happens, and the effects actually don't dissipate for about 100 miles away from the distribution center. But they've made this to those kind of corrupt local economic development officials, this compelling case that this stuff needs to be subsidized. It's really bad. It's a giant scam. And it's not even the scam we started talking about yet.
Because that's just the distribution centers. Then we get to data centers. I imagine it's all of the same externalities or harms to the local community to have a data center. And for a data center, there's a huge load on the water supply too, right?
Yeah, so the case actually for a data center is even worse to my mind than for subsidizing HQ2 or a warehouse, though all of them are bad. A data center, right, for Amazon Web Services, a data center is absolutely necessary business infrastructure. There is no Amazon Web Services without these facilities. It doesn't exist as a business. So you're having the public literally build the business's infrastructure on the public dime. But also, the idea that these facilities foster any sort of economic development is nonsense. Almost nobody works in them, maybe 50 jobs in one of those facilities, maybe. And most of those aren't tech jobs, right? Most of those are kind of low paid, no benefit, janitorial, security type situations, not the sort of jobs you build a sustainable local economy on. They cause no knock-on economic effects because it's just a giant building that doesn't look like anything and that no one actually needs to be at. In fact, I would argue they blunt local economic development because no one wants to build anything next to these things. They just sit there by themselves, surrounded by acres of parking, doing nothing. And then to your question, and this has become really controversial in other parts of the country, less so on the East Coast, but out in the West, where they are having more resource problems than we are here back east, and I'm down in Washington, D.C., for reference. There have been a lot of controversies about the water and power use of these facilities. And Amazon and the other tech companies, Google, Facebook, will often fight to keep secret how much water and how much power these facilities are using so that local communities actually don't find out just how bad a deal this is for them. But yet, you are ultimately at the end of the day talking about this super profitable corporation, one of, if not the most powerful corporations in the country, if not the world, having its business infrastructure built at public expense. It's completely ridiculous, which brings us to Frederick County.
Okay, you mentioned the secrecy that they don't want local communities to know how much water and power they're drawing down. And that's just the beginning of the secrecy, the interest in secrecy on the part of Amazon. They don't want the public to know anything at all about the deal. They don't even want the public to know that they're thinking of making a deal with the local community. As you say in the piece, it's icky all the way down. What is the deal with secrecy, and how did that play out in this particular case you've been writing about now for a year and a half in Frederick County, north of DC and Maryland?
Amazon, during these corporate subsidy deals, is very aggressive in its use of non-disclosure agreements. It requires public officials, this is including county commissioners, mayors, town councilors, anybody who works in an elected office that may have to weigh in on this deal, to sign an NDA when it's considering bringing a facility to a particular area. It also requires, again, the kind of corrupt economic development bureaucracy people to sign these agreements. And Amazon is not alone in this. Lots of big corporations use this tactic when they're coming in to make a corporate subsidy deal in a community. But Amazon is particularly aggressive and has forced them onto more people in these dealings than most corporations do. And the very explicit point of these is to ensure that there is no public feedback when these deals are being negotiated. They want to make sure that until it's all done, dusted, finalized out there, we are receiving X dollars in return for this data center, warehouse, whatever the heck it is, that no one gets to have, that's to like kind of pop out of the woodwork and say, hey, maybe this isn't such a great idea for a community. And this is all sounding really bleak and I'm sounding bad, but this is actually a kind of happy story because that brings us to Frederick County, Maryland, where folks in the local community got wind that something was up, right? They were noticing folks in suits around. People were being asked for like estimates on how much it would cost for them to sell their land. They just kind of got the sense This is a rural community. It's, you know, maybe hour and a half away from Washington, D.C. in Maryland. It's beautiful. There's a lot of agriculture. I go hiking there. It's a really pretty part of the country. And it's a small, like it's a, you know, kind of small, tight-knit community. They noticed something was up. And everyone got to talking to each other. A bunch of local activists got together, had the sense that there was an Amazon deal going on. And they actually very cleverly used pretty good state open meetings law in Maryland. They complained to the state, it's called the Open Meetings Board, essentially, and said, hey, we think our local elected officials are holding secret meetings with Amazon and breaking state law while doing so. They got a ruling back from the state board that, yes, in fact, that's exactly what was happening. County commissioners and local city councilors had all been illegally meeting with Amazon about this proposed data center and whatever sort of stuff would be needed to facilitate the building of this data center, including taking land away from what is like a nature preserve in order to give it to Amazon.
Oh,
It's like
nice.
protected land. Yeah, really nice. And so it all became public, and Amazon ultimately pulled out of the project because they were like, whoa, there needs to be public involvement in this. Like, we're not here for that. We don't do that. We don't let the plebs come in and like have their say. And Amazon ultimately pulled the plug. And so now we're fast forwarding about a year, and the folks who led that effort have been filing Freedom of Information Act requests with the various governmental bodies, and courts have ruled that all of this information now needs to start coming out. So they've been winning their court cases over Freedom of Information Act requests and getting all this great stuff. So what I was able to write about was the way in which the Maryland State Department of Commerce was helping to facilitate these secret dealings, was helping to facilitate the signing of NDAs, was pressuring other bodies in the Maryland government to stay quiet about the deal, was arguing for anonymity with other portions of the Maryland state government, even when Maryland state law said those dealings should have been public. One of the most striking things was that Amazon was going to need sort of public right of way for its cables to this data center. And under Maryland state law, that should have been a public process. But the State Commerce Department was going around and saying, actually, could we keep that secret too, even though we know the law says not to, because of air quote business competitive reasons. So really just the records, and kudos to the folks there. They're called the Sugarloaf Alliance. They've done a ton of really great work. Kudos to them for following through with this and like getting all these records out there for people like me to dig through, because it just showed the extent to which, and this is really true in New York too, this like ugly economic development bureaucracy grossness occurs for long stretches of time before the public ever gets an inkling that something may be happening in their backyard.
So what you have is a giant company that comes into a community, tells the local officials, don't tell anyone that it's us because we intend to break the law multiple times. And we intend for the public to pay us in order to bring this terrible deal into their community. So, I mean, it's the need for secrecy is obvious. If anyone caught wind of what they were doing, all kinds of stuff would happen. Then it goes so far as other areas of the government also working on Amazon's behalf, trying to keep things secret for what was it, business competitive reasons?
Business competitive reasons. And this is like the kind of big fallacy that's, I call it economic development brain. It's kind of taken over. The people who work on this stuff, both on the public side and the agencies, and on the private side, so those are your like site selection consultants and all the kind of people who grease the skids to get this public money flowing, they all have economic development brain. They all get it in their minds that it is actually the secrecy is a necessary ingredient of facilitating these deals in the name of the public good, when actually it's the exact opposite. The public benefits from an open, competitive kind of auction process, right? Because you can imagine a world in which Amazon says, we would like, you know, X million dollars to build a facility here, and we're going to pay Y dollars below market cost for the land. But some other company sees that and says, actually, we'll bring our facility in for less than that. What do you think, Maryland? And it actually works out better for the state. But everybody gets public, gets economic development brain, and they think you, I get air quotes. I know I'm on the radio, but I'm doing air quotes all the time. Air quote, need to keep these things secret so that other jurisdictions and other corporations don't find out, when it's better for everyone to have this whole process either A, not exist in the first place, right? Like the whole economic development model is broken. But if it's going to exist, having it be public and transparent and have multiple players bidding for the same parcel of land or the same facility is actually beneficial to the public.
I mean, Amazon is so clearly a monopoly. Like all of these big tech firms, they're striving to protect their monopoly. And for them to say that we need this to be secret for competitive reasons, give me a break.
Right. And this is it's absolutely about monopoly maintenance, right? Because if you think about the folks who would be upset about these deals and that Amazon is trying to cut out the process, it's local businesses, it's local retailers, it's the folks who never get these sort of deals and never get their necessary infrastructure paid for by the public. And so that results in higher costs for them, you know, inability to pay higher wages, higher prices, all these sort of negative things for local businesses result from Amazon getting these sort of deals. So they are the ones who would be most upset and most inclined to say, hey, County Commissioner X, hey, Mayor Z, like, please don't do this. And that's who Amazon wants to cut out of the process.
I'm not an economic development expert.
I think it's better to not be an expert. Once you become an expert, you get economic development brain. It's bad.
But it just seems so obvious to me that on the one hand, we have a closed, secretive process where we're privileging the interests of a trillion-dollar company to do whatever it wants and to get the public to pay for their development. That's door number A. Door number B is an open, transparent process that gets comment from local citizens, local small businesses, and allows the democratic process to take shape like we're supposed to in this nominal democracy that we live in. I don't know, which one should we use, the closed secretive process or the open democratic process? Can you tell me, Pat, why does it always go to the closed process? Why is it? I know money and power, maybe that's the answer, but I don't want to be cynical here. Why are we defaulting to the wrong process?
I mean, the answer is going to be pretty much where you were headed. And folks realize this is going on. If we, once again, to the Niagara deal, there was a requirement in that Niagara deal that there be a public meeting before the $100+ million deal was consummated. And they held it at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday with like 18 hours notice. And folks, to their credit, a few folks did go and stand up and say, hey, this is super inappropriate. It's in the middle of the workday. People can't get here. They're at their jobs. Like, to call this public notice is a joke. But that is all this stuff is intentionally built in to the system, even when they're supposed to be public processes. And that was my lead up into saying the reason this stuff persists the way that it does is not for any economic reason. It's purely political reasons. The academic research and our real world experience shows that, sadly, politicians who engage in more of this economic development, corporate subsidy dealmaking win more votes in subsequent elections. Just fact, straight up, it's good for your political career because it builds political capital. In the sense that you get to claim you created all these jobs, you get to send out a press release, you get to do the tweets, you get to show up at a groundbreaking with the stupid shovel and the hard hat, right? You get to do all this stuff that gives the impression that you are doing your job. One of my favorite, and by that I mean the most depressing stats, is that one of the surest ways to predict whether your state is going to increase its corporate subsidy spending in a given year is not to look at any economic indicator. Don't look at jobs, don't look at poverty, don't look at GDP growth, don't look at income growth, none of that. Simply check and see if your incumbent governor is up for re-election that year. It is one of the most surefire ways to predict that your state is going to increase its corporate subsidy spending that year, because governors realize that this stuff wins votes. And then you get into, right, there's also a lot of research showing that there's a nasty feedback loop between corporations that receive subsidies and their future political donations. Companies that engage in more lobbying and more political giving win more subsidies, right? It gets into this whole gross money in politics area. But purely as a political tool, sadly, these things work at the end of that process. When these projects individually go up for public debate and comment, they tend to get defeated because people understand in the moment that this thing right now, this very specific idea of giving a bunch of money to Amazon for this particular warehouse is bad and they don't like it. But in the aggregate, they do tend to move votes. And so it's the job of like people like me and you to try and change that over the long term. But that's why it persists.
That's really interesting. I thought it was going to be more, if you let this deal go through, we're going to give you a campaign contribution next time around. And you said that
that does happen to some extent, but the primary driver is just when people, did I understand right, when the citizens see the groundbreaking and they hear or see the press release about jobs created, we got a new data center, that's enough to drive the votes, just seeing the thing go up.
And it's not until right, usually years later, when they realize all those promises have been broken, that they see how bad the deal has been. And by that point, right, is the political actor even in that office anymore? Like, if you look back, one of the most famous, right, economic development boondoggles was Foxconn in Wisconsin, which ultimately did cost former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker his job, because it was such a gigantic debacle that got tons of attention. And President Trump said it was going to be the eighth wonder of the world and all this nonsense. And eventually he did lose because of it, largely because of that deal. But it took a while, because the political capital is built immediately in the press releases and the news reports and the news about how this project is going to create X thousand jobs and do Y and Z in the community. And it takes a while before you realize that none of that happened. And in the interim, right, the politician was able to reap those political benefits.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. We're a little over halfway through my interview with Pat Garofalo from the American Economic Liberties Project, talking about how citizens are being forced to pay for big tech data centers beyond their knowledge or consent. And that's general. You know, that's the general pattern. You heard Pat talk about the Sugarloaf Alliance in Frederick County, Maryland. There are bright spots like that where citizens organize and push back and eject the big tech monopoly from their community before it sucks down all of their money, electricity, and water. So there is some limited good news, but I think it's important for us to understand how the pattern usually plays out. And as Pat said, there are some unfortunate political realities that drive this phenomenon. A lot of concentration of money and power in those big tech companies, and that has reverberations throughout the economy. Let's go ahead now and listen to the rest of my interview with Pat Garofalo here on Tectonic. Okay, we should acknowledge that in your work on the Boondoggle newsletter, you're covering more than just development deals for big tech corporations and warehouses and data centers. You've also written quite a bit, and I know you wrote in your book, The Billionaire Boondoggle, about sports stadiums. This is a category of subsidized project that I love to hate. And again, you're the expert. I've generally read about these through your writing, Pat, but every mention I see of a new stadium going up, it's always at public expense in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Billions now.
Billions now. Fantastic.
Yeah. Had a couple clear the billion.
You did a deep dive on a publicly funded arena in Tempe, Arizona, for, as you said, the long-lamented Arizona Coyotes, a sad sack National Hockey League franchise. Why does the public have to be asked, or maybe not asked, to pay for a new arena? Is this indicative of what you see out there when new sports arenas go up?
Absolutely. Over the last several decades, it's become extremely common practice, as you just said, for the public to spend incredibly large sums of money building sports stadiums. The leagues, the professional sports leagues, have gotten very good, similar to the way that Amazon has gotten very good at extracting these subsidies, mostly by threatening to move franchises, right? They say, build me a new stadium, arena, whatever the thing is, or we move your team to some other city and rip the heart out of your local community, right? We think of professional sports teams as like part of the fabric of the community, almost a community asset, but they're not. They're a business that's usually owned by a billionaire. And the threat to tear that away often works and facilitates these deals. And the politicians in office at the moment don't want to be the person who loses the team to some other city, right? You don't want to be the person in Baltimore who lost the Colts. Like, you just don't want to be that guy. The good news here is that the public has in large part caught on to this scam, because when these deals are put before the public, and you know that can be facilitated through referendums in a lot of places, they tend to vote them down. And that's actually the good news out of Tempe, is that the Arena deal lost. And very convincingly, when it did come up on the ballot, the Arena opponent, the publicly funded Arena opponents, who were outspent 35-1, won across the board. There were three questions. They needed to win on all three. They won on all three. It was a really great moment for folks like me who are out there making this case. But the downside of that is that the sports teams are increasingly moving towards the kind of secrecy that we talked about with Amazon. There was recently a deal that made it through the Nevada legislature to build a stadium in Las Vegas for the Oakland A's, who have been agitating for years for a new stadium in Oakland and haven't gotten it. And so now it looks like they're going to move to Las Vegas. And that thing was like wham, bam, through the state legislature in a special session. I'm sure people weren't even reading the bill. And so the teams have resorted to those sort of tactics. So the sports teams have increasingly been resorting to secrecy and speed and a lot of obfuscation. There are these supposedly economic forecasting firms that run around making these studies. And again, I'm air quoting everyone's studies about how every stadium is going to be great for the local economy. It's going to create all these jobs, all this knock-on economic activity, you know, rainbows and unicorns are going to fall from the sky onto your community and everything's going to be great. And it's just all a giant scam. One of the main creators of those studies is this company called Convention Sports and Leisure, which is owned in part by the owners of the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Yankees, who have a gigantic conflict of interest because it makes them more money to see stadium subsidy deals go up. So they own this firm that runs around and argues for stadium subsidy deals. It's giant and gross. And to be clear, every independent look at stadium subsidies has found that they don't work in any meaningful economic sense. They don't create jobs. They don't create income growth. They don't do anything worthwhile. One of the most studied and most like beat to death areas of economics, and it's almost unanimous across the board. Like there's no debating the economic research on this question anymore. It's purely one of politics and perception. And ultimately, right, and this is the part I'm most sympathetic to, again, communities don't want their teams to leave. I grew up in northern New Jersey, and it looked for a time, I'm a big hockey fan, it looked for a time like the New Jersey Devils were going to leave and go to Nashville when I was a kid. And it was heartbreaking, right? It's horrible. You don't want that to happen. And politicians, again, don't want to be the ones who lose their team to some other city. And that's what facilitates this gigantic scam. But I'm hopeful that the public is increasingly seeing that this is the case. And when these things come up for public vote, they almost always get voted down. Like, the public gets it. You can trust people to understand the dynamics here.
Well, what would happen if the New Jersey Devils did that same thing today? They said, we might go to some other city in another state unless we get X dollars. What would your position be? I mean, should it be for people who love that team? Should the position be, no, we're not paying you one red cent? You know, you make it on your own or you can leave. Or should it be, do you think there is a reasonable amount of subsidy that the public should pony up for teams, beyond which, you know, these larger numbers, it becomes unreasonable? Which way would you say right now?
I can't imagine a stadium subsidy deal that I would support in any way, shape, or form. It's just the sad reality of the business. And right, like, ultimately, this model of economic development needs to go away. And I have worked with a group of lawmakers at the state level who have tried, and it's really hard to do this, but they've at least talked about and gotten the ball rolling of making a kind of agreements between states that these sort of things won't happen. States won't use economic development incentives to steal businesses from each other. So that's really encouraging. But yeah, on the stadium front, there's just no way in which that's a good expenditure. And unfortunately, even in that scenario, me as the New Jersey Devils fan would have to say, you know what? It is a much better use of that money to do almost literally anything else with it, right? If you think about, for $1 billion, how much healthcare you can provide, how many schools you can build, how many teachers you can pay, how many fire stations you can build, how many potholes you can fill, like, pick your thing. I almost don't even care what it goes to. Small business grants, like, you know, I'm a not really a tax cut guy usually, but even cutting taxes would be better than this use of money. Like, there's just, it just does not pay off in any meaningful sense. So it's really hard to see a world in which I would throw support behind anyone, even if it were my favorite team. And again, now I live in Washington, D.C., and I go see D.C. United play at Audi Field, which received about $150 million. And I can, like, fully acknowledge that that was a fine deal for me, Pat, the individual who likes to go to this stadium and can afford it and likes to watch this team play. Horrible deal for the city. Shouldn't have happened. And if that meant D.C. United went away, like, eh, that's probably better for the city.
Tell us a little bit about the American Economic Liberties Project and how that fits in with what you're doing with Boondoggle.
Totally, yeah. So it is a research and advocacy organization that focuses on decreasing the power corporations have over the economy and our democracy. So we work on policy and advocacy around that idea, around decentralizing power, around getting corporations out of the political process. We have a team that does federal work. I lead our state and local work. We have folks who do the political stuff. We have a bunch of really great thinkers who do the policy stuff. We have a bunch of lawyers who both file amicus briefs in big, important corporate power cases and also work on the policy side and make sure I'm not trying to do anything too stupid. It's a really great shop. It's full of really great folks. I think we've been really effective in getting the word out there.
How do people get in touch with you and your work on Boondoggle?
Yeah, so it's boondoggle.substack.com. You can drop me a comment on one of my pieces there. I am also on, for the time being, while it exists, Twitter, X, whatever the heck it is. I am Pat_Garofalo. The underscore is really important. If you don't use the underscore, you end up messaging a Republican member of the Minnesota House of Representatives. Don't do that. We don't agree on very much. but my direct messages there are open. So as long as that platform exists, you can always get in touch with me there. But the newsletter is actually probably the most quick and efficient way to get in touch with me. And I really encourage folks to do that. I think one of the most important parts of my job is building this network, not just of folks in office who are elected, though that's really important, but also of just everyday citizens who are interested in stuff, because the intelligence sharing about what works and what doesn't from place to place in these fights is hugely, hugely important. So sharing tactics that have been successful, that haven't. If you see one of these deals happening in your community, I can connect you to folks who have successfully fought them off, who haven't, but who have learned a lot from engaging in them. And so that part of the gig is really, really important and really useful, because it does take collective knowledge of everyone who's worked on this to make these deals go away.
Well, you're doing great work, Pat, and I look forward to future issues of Boondoggle and would recommend it to Tectonic listeners. Thanks very much for being on the show today, and hope you'll be back on the show again sometime.
Anytime. Always happy to talk about this stuff.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the remaining section of the show today. We just heard from Pat Garofalo, who, as he just said, is the Director of State and Local Policy at the American Economic Liberties Project. That's a great group there, doing good work. Pat also writes the Boondoggle email newsletter about how corporations take advantage of states, cities, and local communities. And we certainly heard some relevant examples of that, of corporations taking advantage of all of us. And links to Pat and the AELP and also Pat's book, The Billionaire Boondoggle, are all on the episode page for today's show. If you go to tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm, you'll find it under the episode title, Citizens Are Being Forced to Pay for Big Tech Data Centers, which I think pretty much describes what Pat is trying to warn us about that has been going on for some time. And you'll see front and center on that episode page this graphic that I took from this report that Pat published, again, from November 2025, How to Rein in Big Tech's Secret Data Center Deals. And this is a chart that shows the company names and the dollar amounts of the subsidies or incentives or, you know, bribes basically from taxpayers to big tech monopolies, all worth in the trillions of dollars. And top of the list, as I told you before, is this Amazon deal in Indiana that had up to $8 billion in incentives, which I'm going to say more about in a second. But first, I want to take a step back and just talk about data centers and their growth system-wide. And I know in past shows I've talked about data centers in countries outside the U.S., but let's just take a second to talk about the power draw inside the U.S. just based on data centers, okay? There's this report that came from the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory through the Department of Energy. This was published in December 2024, and the report is called the 2024 United States Data Center Energy Usage Report. I actually found this in the footnotes of Pat Garofalo's report. And this Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory report is pretty comprehensive. These are researchers that are going in and looking at the scope, the growth, the power draw, the impact on the grid of these data centers as a system across the U.S. And there's this chart called Total U.S. Data Center Electricity Use from 2014 through 2028. So obviously, given that the report was published in December 2024, the right side of this chart is a projection of where the electricity usage could go through 2028. But as of when they wrote the report, the total data center electricity consumption across the U.S. was 4.4%. So that's over 4% of all electricity in the U.S. was going just to data centers. And it's interesting because the projection, as they looked ahead, you can see it. Again, this chart I've put on the episode page at tectonic.fm, you can look at it for yourself and see the trend line goes up exponentially after 2024. And of course, this is all projection, but even on the low end of the projection, it goes up exponentially. And so according to these very detailed projections made by these researchers who are subject matter experts, the low end estimate as of 2028 is that 6.7% of all electricity will go to data centers. The upper end estimate is that by 2028, a full 12% of all electricity in the U.S. will go to data centers. That is unbelievable. Now, I know there's some people listening to this right now who are thinking, well, this whole AI thing is a bubble and it's got to pop before 2028. And so, you know, maybe it'll be all the way down at zero by 2028. You know, who knows what's going to happen? No one knows if and when this bubble is going to pop in. Will it be down to zero? Will it be a correction? Will it be something in the middle? No one knows. If you knew, you would know more than everybody on Earth. And this is a key question a lot of people are trying to figure out. But the best we can do right now is we can take measurements of what the data centers are doing right now. Again, over 4% of all electricity in the U.S. And you can acknowledge that with these giant buildouts from the big tech beasts, that the electricity draw is going to go up. It is going to go up with the facilities that are under construction right now. I don't know how it'll all end and when and so on, but it's already taking a huge amount of the electricity in the country. And so that brings me to Pat Garofalo's report. Again, it's called How to Rein in Big Tech's Secret Data Center Deals. This was published in November 2025. Garofalo writes, As big tech data centers proliferate across the country, their exorbitant power and water needs are straining the capacity of local utility systems. According to Bloomberg, wholesale electricity prices are up 267% in the last 5 years in areas near data centers. Many, if not all, of these data centers will also be subsidized by taxpayers, directly siphoning resources away from local communities. So, big tech's building spree will place new strains and costs on local communities while providing questionable benefits to residents and taxpayers, all under a corrupt regime of secret agreements that excludes the public from participating in any debate. So well stated. I mean, Pat just delivers the goods there to say this is a corrupt arrangement that is not good for the communities. And he gives some examples. What I appreciated in these examples is that Pat is talking about the money that's involved, the dollar amounts that are being handed over to these big tech companies, and what those scale of investments could do for the public good if they were deployed in, you know, more sane and intelligent and compassionate ways. For example, we talked about this Indiana data center complex by Amazon. Receiving up to $8 billion in incentives in 2024, that amount, $8 billion, is more than the entire state's 2024 state funding for health and human services. Just one data center complex that the taxpayers are being forced, outside of their knowledge and consent, forced to hand over to Amazon, that is larger than the entire annual budget of health and human services in that state. How about another example? This one has a slightly lower dollar amount, but it's still blood boiling. This is Apple. Apple received $214 million for a data center in Iowa in 2017. This is mostly from the city of Waukee, Iowa. That amount, $214 million, is real money to a place like Waukee, Iowa. And Garofalo points out that that amount of money is enough to fund the Waukee Police Department for 30 years. Okay, so you have these data centers all, and he has other examples too, I just wanted to read you those too, all over the country that are taking money from taxpayers and diverting them away from police departments, health and human services, roads, schools, hospitals, support for people who are food insecure. As Pat said in the interview, choose your cause, fill potholes, anything, anything, but taking the citizens' money and handing it over to big tech companies so that they can build a data center that is going to raise electricity prices, according to Bloomberg, as much as 267% in the areas that surround the data center. It's a terrible deal for citizens. Why are we doing this? Well, it's somehow this has become the modus operandi of governments, local officials, and of course, the big tech monopolies. As the American Economic Liberties Project posted about this report by Pat Garofalo, big tech has secured billions in public subsidies for data centers promising jobs and growth. Instead, costs are getting passed on to consumers. Barely any jobs are created, and operators often refuse to admit how much water they expect to use. Yeah, good luck finding out from Amazon or Apple or Facebook Meta or Google or Microsoft how much water they're actually going to use. They are infamously reluctant to tell the truth about their draw on the local water table. However, there are possibilities to fight back, as the AELP writes. States can fight back against these secret subsidy deals. And it gives four suggestions. One is to ban NDAs and economic deals. Two is to abolish data center subsidies. Three is require public hearings with full transparency ahead of votes. And finally, release the power and water data to the public. So if you want to write a letter to a local official, if this is something that inspires you, the AELP has some suggestions for bullet points for what you could put into that sort of communication. And finally, I want to talk about the largest data center in the Western Hemisphere. Okay, so U.S., Canada, Central and South America, all together, there is one data center being constructed that is larger than all of them. And this is the one that Mark Zuckerberg boasted in a post that the footprint of this one data center would be a sizable percentage of the island of Manhattan. He actually showed it overlaid Manhattan as if to boast that he, of all of the monopolists, has built the biggest data center. It's not done being constructed yet, but it's under construction in Louisiana, in a place somewhat north of New Orleans, my old stomping grounds. And there is an article on the episode page. This is CNBC from June 2025. The headline is, "To Land Meta's Massive $10 Billion Data Center. Louisiana pulled out all the stops. Will it be worth it?" You know, this is one of those headlines that asks a question that you already know the answer to. What do you think in Northeast Louisiana that the public subsidies are going to amount to $10 billion or some significant portion of that being handed over to Facebook Meta in order to build the largest data center in the Western Hemisphere? The CNBC story says the state offered billions of dollars in tax breaks to win the project, and the local utility will supply three new power plants. So it doesn't say how much of the $10 billion the state offered, but it's multiple billions of dollars being given up by taxpayers in Louisiana to Mark Zuckerberg in order to build the largest data center in the Western Hemisphere. And you have to take one more step back as you look at this system. We've looked at the electricity draw. We've looked at the NDAs. We've touched on the lack of job growth. We've talked about the rise in electricity prices for citizens, the draining of water resources. But the one thing that I didn't bring up that I want to leave you with is, what is all of this for? I mean, obviously it's for AI. You know, the big tech monopolies are all in, so to speak, on this AI mania. They are saying AI is going to change everything and do this and do that, by which they mean it's a desperate bid for just a little more growth, for their growth at any cost, unethical sludge factories. But for the rest of us outside of big tech, who are not the top leaders in the monopolies, for the rest of us, what does it mean to be living in a society that is inundated in the AI slop that comes out of these data centers? Do you think that's any good? So when you look at this $10 billion data center in Louisiana, you have to ask, because the billions of dollars that taxpayers handed over to Mark Zuckerberg did not go to hospitals and schools and everything else. Instead, it went to extend the growth of Zuckerberg's AI sludge factory. Is that worth it? That should be a headline. Do we think that it's worth it, that instead of building new hospitals and fixing the roads and improving our schools and paying our teachers more, that we instead want to inundate all of our media, government, news, education system with unethical AI slop overseen by Mark Zuckerberg and other tech oligarchs? Do we think that's a good trade? Of course it's not. And so I hope, friends, that there will be more groups that will rise up and fight back when the data center tries to come to town. And even when the data center is fully constructed, that there will be some way to exert citizens' power against these big tech behemoths by talking to local officials and doing something about this, because this is an unjust system and it cannot last. That's all the time I have for you today. Until next time, friends, you know exactly what to do. I want you to avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. You are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Dave Mandel with his prog rock show. It's called It's Complicated. And to go out today, I thought we could hear a sadly still relevant song by Momus, whose title I cannot really tell you, but it's something like The Infecalization of Everything. Hope you have a great week, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Forgive me for cutting off the first second or two of that track. Fat Fingers, they call them. Welcome. This show is called It's Complicated. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here every Monday at this time. Hold on while I update my online playlist, will you please? Okay. I bring you this show every Monday. I'm here between the hours of 7 and 8 p.m. every Monday night. Thanks so much for joining me. We're going to start tonight's show with a band I've been meaning to play, and then they, lo and behold, they performed live on these airwaves a few nights ago, and it was a great set, and that reminded me that I wanted to play them, so here they are. This is going to be a group called Gushes. They are based in New York City, and this is a new release. I think this record just came out like in the last couple months. It's called Delicious Collision, and they also have a Bandcamp page that you can check out with all kinds of information about the lineup and so on. And this will be a track called Yo Banana Boy. This is the group Gushes.
Thank you. We'll be right back.